Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast, Paying the PTO's Attorney's Fees Edition. I'm your host, Grace Gotchling. On October 7th, 2019, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Peter v. Nantquist Incorporated, a case which considers whether a party opting to bring a challenge in federal district court to an adverse decision of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office's Patent Trial and Appeal Board must pay the PTO's resulting attorney's fees. When a patent applicant is rejected by the PTO and the appeal board affirms that decision on appeal, the aggrieved applicant may either pursue further but relatively constrained review in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, or the applicant may file a more expansive challenge in federal district court. The latter option is authorized by U.S. Code 35, Section 145, but the statute also provides that, quote, all the expenses of the proceeding shall be paid by the applicant. In this case, Nantquist challenged an adverse appeal board decision in federal district court, but lost. After the judgment was affirmed by the Federal Circuit, the PTO sought reimbursement of its expenses from Nantquist, including nearly $80,000 in attorney's fees. The district court denied recovery based on the American rule that parties in federal court typically bear their own fees unless otherwise directed by Congress. A divided panel of the Federal Circuit ultimately affirmed the district court. This decision, however, was in tension with the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit's construction of similar language in the Lanham Act. Therefore, the Supreme Court granted cert to consider whether the phrase, all the expenses of the proceedings in U.S. Code 35, Section 145, encompasses the personnel expenses the PTO incurs when its employees, including attorneys, defend the agency in Section 145 litigation. And now, to discuss the case, we have Robert J. Rando, founder and lead counsel at the Rando Law Firm PC. Please note that Mr. Rando is co-counsel on an amicus brief filed on behalf of the Association of Amicus Counsel in this case.
I followed this case over its history and would like to begin the way I usually do when I'm presenting on the case over the course of this journey. I thought that the most difficult aspect of this case would be figuring out how to pronounce Nantquist. I've soon learned that that was the easy part. The hard part and the question at the heart of this case is figuring out what the word expenses means within the context of the provision in the patent laws, 35 U.S.C. Section 145, and that states in part, quote, all the expenses of the proceedings shall be paid by the applicant, close quote. Now, under Section 145, an applicant dissatisfied with the decision of a patent trial and appeal board in an appeal under Section 134A may, unless appeal has been taken to the United States Court of Appeals for the Fed Circuit, have remedy by civil action against the director in the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia. So the question before the Supreme Court is whether or not the term expenses would include legal costs or fees, or as commonly referred to, attorney's fees. Now, before we get into the arguments by the government and the respondent, I'd like to go over some of the background of this case. In 2001, Dr. Hans Klingman described a method for treating cancer and claimed it in a U.S. non-provisional patent application titled Natural Killer Cell Lines and Methods of Use, which was assigned to Nantquist. In October 2013, the PTAB affirmed part of the examiner's obviousness rejection of several claims in the application. Later in 2013, in order to present additional evidence of patentability and traversal of the PTAB's adverse ruling on obviousness, the applicant instituted a Section 145 civil action for de novo review in the Eastern District of Virginia. On September 2, 2015, in an unpublished memorandum opinion and order, the district court granted the PTO's motion for summary judgment on the substantive merits of patentability, holding that the additional evidence taken together with the administrative record did not overcome the obviousness rejection. That summary judgment was affirmed by a divided Federal Circuit panel. On September 2016, 2015, 14 days later, the Department of Justice attorneys for the PTO filed a motion for reimbursement of the government's expenses and attorney's fees, totaling approximately $112,000, pursuant to the agency's interpretation of the "all the expenses of the proceeding shall be paid by the applicant" provision of Section 145. Now, it's interesting to note that including the phrase "expenses and attorney's fees" would suggest the implicit acknowledgement that in this context, expenses on the one hand and attorney's fees on the other are indeed qualitatively separate and independent terms, but we'll leave that for later. On February 2016, in a memorandum opinion and order, the court, in accordance with the all expenses provision, granted the portion of the government's motion seeking an award of the PTO's litigation costs in the form of expenditures for the expert witnesses in an amount of approximately $33,000. However, the court denied the rest of the motion as being unauthorized by Section 145 and in derogation of the common law doctrine known as the American rule against the shifting of attorney's fees, insofar as the government sought reimbursement of its legal costs in the form of salaries of the PTO's in-house law personnel attributed pro rata to two attorneys and a paralegal assistant who were, quote, diverted from their tasks on other matters in order to work on the case. The government appealed to the Federal Circuit. A divided three-judge Federal Circuit panel reversed the district court's denial of the government's motion for reimbursement insofar as it requested award of the PTO's legal costs. The majority had been persuaded that all the expenses be awarded against the plaintiff applicant under Section 145 must include the pro rata salaries of the PTO's in-house legal staff that assisted the DOJ attorneys in the case, regardless of whether or to what extent the agency prevailed on the underlying merits of the civil action, and without any analysis of the reasonableness of those salaries attributable to the time spent on the case. Thereafter, an 11-member majority of the regular active judges on the Federal Circuit voted sua sponte to vacate the panel decision, reinstate and re-adjudicate the government's appeal of the district court's decision. The case was set for en banc hearing with submission of new merits briefs, and the parties were strictly limited to the issue of whether Section 145's all expenses of the proceedings provision required the shifting of the defendant PTO's legal costs to the plaintiff applicant in all instances. July 2018, the Federal Circuit issued a divided 7-4 en banc affirmance of the district court's denial of the government's motion for legal costs. In December 2018, the government, on behalf of the PTO, appealed the en banc ruling by filing the timely petition for writ of cert to the Federal Circuit, which the Supreme Court granted on March 4, 2019. Now, before I get into the oral argument, a few general observations. It appears from the argument that the justices may find themselves in an unfamiliar territory of agreeing with each other and agreeing with the majority in the Federal Circuit's en banc opinion, although they often agree with each other in reversing the Federal Circuit in patent cases. That being said, I don't see a right-left divide or administrative state divide from the oral argument. However, should those issues emerge, more efficient government spending, agency deference, etc., the decision could be a lot closer. Short of that outcome, if the American rule rules the day, all puns intended, we could see a 9-0 or worse, maybe at worst a 7-2 affirmance of the Federal Circuit. The questions posed to both sides, but certainly to the government, focused mostly on a couple of themes. One was that under the American rule, each pays their own legal fees, absent clear language, providing for attorney fee shift, and depending on prevailing party or loser pays. Another line of inquiry focused on the history of the PTO's failure for over 170 plus years to interpret or at least enforce implementation of inclusion of legal fees or attorney's fees as part of the recoverable or reimbursed expenses in the expenses provision of the statute and its predecessors. In fact, the government was pressed on that issue, and the justices queried whether there might be a doctrinal basis for deciding the so-called habit of not including the legal fees, which would provide a basis to convince the court or to carry the day. Now for the oral argument. The PTO was represented by Malcolm Stewart, DOJ Deputy Solicitor General, and Nanquist was represented by Mr. Marvin Chu of Irela Mandela. As an interesting side note, having nothing to do with anything other than Laura Peter, deputy director, being substituted in as a nominal party, the IREL firm is current USPTO director Andre Iancu's former law firm before he assumed the PTO director position. The government argument. So Mr. Stewart opened up with stating the question presented as whether the expenses include money that the PTO spends to employ lawyers and paralegals who assist with the agency defense of the Section 140. He then articulated three principal reasons why the answer to the question should be yes. First, the term expenses unambiguously encompasses costs, that is, money paid to employees or other personnel to accomplish a particular task. And unlike the term costs, which has a similarly broad common meaning, the court has not construed the term expenses as a legal term of art with a more limited scope. Second, requiring patent applicants who file under Section 145 to pay personnel expenses of the PTO is consistent with the overall statutory scheme. Congress has directed the PTO to charge fees that are sufficient to cover its aggregate operating costs, including personnel expenses, and Section 145 applicants put the PTO to particular expenses, and it's therefore consistent with the logic of the statute to require them to pay more. Third, it's especially appropriate to require Section 145 plaintiffs to pay the PTO's personal expenses because Section 141, which is the direct appeal provision to the Federal Circuit, is available as an alternative means of obtaining judicial review. And in the government's view, Section 141 is not a cut rate or substandard mode of judicial review. It's ordinary, on-the-record, APA-style judicial review. And it contains no requirement that the applicant who chooses that course, must pay the PTO's personal expenses. I'll stop here to note there's a bit of hand-waving going on here in that there is and are differences in the two proceedings with respect to the standard of review. The Federal Circuit Appeal is solely on the administrative record, has a high threshold and deference, where the district court proceeding is de novo, provides for inclusion of additional evidence, etc. Justice Ginsburg asked the government whether there is any other federal statute that provides attorney's fees on the basis of the naked word expenses. The government reply was no, except for the trademark law analog, which, by the way, is on cert petition in a case known as bookings.com from the Fourth Circuit decision construing the analogous expenses language provision in an opposite outcome to the Federal Circuit in Nanquist. The government also acknowledged that shifting of attorney's fees, Congress uses language like expenses and or expenses included. Justice Kavanaugh was troubled by the fact that although not in this case, the apparent fee shift would require a prevailing party to pay the losing party's legal or attorney's fees, and he referred to it as a radical departure. The government response was in agreement that it was unusual, but then pivoted to its theme that it is not unusual when compared to other stages of the patent application process. So the government's argument is that this is merely an extension of the application process for which the PTO is obligated to balance its books, so to speak, by charging applicants to cover the agency as a self-funding, revenue-generating agency. Of course, Nanquist, during Mr. Chu's argument, would have none of that, and Mr. Chu pointed out that the Section 145 action is an adversarial proceeding in an Article III tribunal and not an agency proceeding. Justice Gorsuch questioned whether expenses could also include overhead for utilities, electric bills, sewage bills, etc. The government response was that there would have to be a connection to the proceeding, so Justice Gorsuch pressed further, and the government admitted in setting its application fees, it is essentially accounting for overhead costs. Justice Gorsuch then said, it was helpful to know that the PTO was already doing that and essentially asked why it took the government 170 years to figure out that the Section 145 legal fees should also be accounted for. The government responded that there was not a good explanation for the past, but the explanation for the current focus was Congress's direction in 2011 to the PTO to balance his books, and that the PTO effort to find a way to do that. Justice Ginsburg then asked if there were, if the government had been violating the statute for all these years. And the government said, not violating, but perhaps like a statute of limitations, it was waiving. And then there was some give and take with Mr. Stewart by Justices Kavanaugh and Kagan regarding whether the government was dropping its argument against the American rule presumption. Mr. Stewart's reply was that, like found by the Fourth Circuit, the mandate is silent on the ultimate outcome of the litigation, so the rule does not apply, or the context leads you to believe that personnel expenses are including attorney and paralegal personnel. Chief Justice Roberts asked whether there would be a request for reimbursement of his time at oral argument. And Mr. Stewart responded, no, because they view 145 is limited to trial expenses and also not for DOJ personnel. Justice Breyer was also troubled by the inconsistencies and long duration of time before the government essentially changed its interpretation. To a prevailing party where the loser pays, here the costs are spread among all the applicants. Justice Ginsburg then pointed out that the Federal Circuit indicated that it would result in an increase of $1.60 per applicant. Now for the respondent argument by Mr. Chu. Mr. Chu, arguing for Nanquist, made 3 points. One, the American rule is a bedrock principle that the court has recognized and applied for two centuries. Second, the government is arguing for a radical departure from the American rule. The government is arguing that when a private party sues the government for its improper action, then the private party must pay for the government's attorneys, even where the government and its attorneys turn out to be flatly wrong. Third, Mr. Chu pointed out that there are over almost 3,300 federal statutory provisions that use the word expenses without any reference to attorney's fees or counsel fees. Some of those provisions are open-ended, as is the case here. The government can point to not a one of those other provisions to say that the word expenses includes attorney's fees, except for these two exceptions, the radical exceptions it's arguing here. Chief Justice Roberts questioned why this is not merely part of a filing fee, following up on the government's argument. Mr. Chu responded that it is not a filing fee, but attorney's fees against a strong backdrop of the American rule. And as noted before, this is not in the PTO, but in the U.S. District Court where the American rule rules. Justice Ginsburg questioned whether there was magic language. Mr. Chu responded that under the American rule, Congress uses specific language to delineate, and without it, the rule should not be violated. Justice Alito questioned the fairness of spreading the cost among all the applicants. Mr. Chu responded, quote, if we were Congress, and we're not, Congress could decide what it thinks is fair or wise or good public policy. But as the court has said in Ayeska and Baker Botts, no matter how good that policy might be, this court does not have the roving authority to make those decisions. It is up to Congress. Certainly, out of all the justices, Justice Breyer seemed more sympathetic to the government. In his questions, there appears to be a consensus among the justices that the government is pushing way beyond violating the American rule. And most commentators seem to have reached the same conclusion based on the oral argument. But as I indicated, if other issues arise with respect to restricting government spending, or if it becomes a question of agency deference issues, that could divide the court. Otherwise, it's likely we would see a 9-0. And of course, Justice Thomas' silence was not unusual. In other patent cases, has not really been a strong proponent of patent protection, thinking of the oil states case in terms of patent rights. So Justice Thomas may be a question mark as well. This case has broader implications than just in the patent arena. I mean, certainly as pointed out by Mr. Chu, there are almost 3,300 statutes with the naked expenses language. So I think it's important not only for in the IP space and you know, the patent law space. But also beyond that, I guess it remains to be seen what other issues might influence the justices when they render their opinion.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.